From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in the summer of 1848 in Cattaraugus, where suffragist Lucretia Mott witnessed a discussion among members of the Seneca Nation. The Seneca were reorganizing their governmental structure, and Mott took notice that the decision makers around the table included women. In Haudenosaunee culture, throughout history through today, women are treated as full participants in society. They have the same rights and responsibilities as men, and often selected chiefs decided if their people would go to war or decided if a man was to be removed from a position of power. And Mott was inspired by what she saw around this table. She brought that experience to Seneca Falls that summer for the first meeting of the women's rights movement. Haudenosaunee women continue to have a powerful influence on politics, society, and culture today. Their impact and achievements are being honored in a new exhibit at Ganondagan called Haudenosaunee Women from the Time of Creation. We'll discuss the exhibit and history this hour and how Haudenosaunee women have shaped our culture. I'd like to welcome our guests in studio. Peter Jemison is Historic Site Manager for Ganondagan. Peter, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Evan. It's great to be here.
And Michael Galbin wears lots of hats and lots of very stylish hats, and he's a curator in this case, among many things. Michael, it's great to have you back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
All right, so Peter, why don't you give me a kind of the broad view, because I can't wait to kind of get into some of the history that, of course, and as we always talk about, is often new to people like me, but it's important. But before we do that, why don't you tell me about the goal of the exhibit that opens Saturday, March 24th?
I think the overall goal is we certainly want to acknowledge the contributions of our women, that we can go back to a historic time period, a prehistoric time period, you might say, meaning before the arrival of Europeans, and bring it all the way up to the present and look at what and how our women have influenced our way of life and how they have influenced others, as you just pointed out, the suffragists. But we look back to the creation story. We start from there. We start with the arrival of a woman we refer to as Sky Woman. She gives birth to a daughter. That daughter gives birth to two twins, and these twins go about making the earth as you and I understand it today and experience it. So we start from the very beginning that, you know, women have had this role of bringing life forth into this world that we live upon. And, you know, then we go up into the time period when we were constantly quarreling and fighting with each other, and there was great division and great fear of one another, and a man came among us with a message of peace. The first person among our people to accept this message was a woman, and we refer to that woman as Jagontsase. So we want to talk about the rights, the privileges, the responsibilities that she earned for our women right then when she accepted this message of peace and unity, this message of peace, power, and righteousness to join us together into a confederacy of five nations. And then we look at the time period when we're living at Ganondagan and when we are a matrilineal society, when women own the house, when women have the responsibility for the children, they have the responsibility for our agricultural way of life, which we depend upon, the three sisters, corn, beans, and squash. We look at you know, their role in choosing our leaders at that time period of selecting leaders from among the men that are available within their clan. And then we move up to the suffragists, and you've touched on that, so I won't belabor that. But the fact that we're still present, we're still here, and we've selected seven women that exemplify to us the women that are taking up responsibilities in their community, carrying them on, and at the same time balancing their lives between their own community, their own traditional community, and the world at large.
Let me ask Michael Galbin a question entirely out of ignorance, and I mean this sincerely. At a time when there's been so much focus on a march towards equality, a women's march in Washington, questions on intersectionality in the women's movement, and what true equality means, what feminism means, is it curious to, you know, people from the Haudenosaunee culture to see this? And do you feel like, you know, in many ways that the standard has been set already for those who would have taken the time to notice in any way?
Well, excuse me. For me, at least, in understanding Haudenosaunee people that I know, if you are informed about your own customs, traditions, and legacy of justice and peace, then it's no surprise But it is a little bit surprising how much work is left to be done in the United States. But I feel also that being surrounded and immersed in what might be American society, that the ideas of feminism and feelings of inequality are also within Native communities. You know, I think there's two ways of looking at it. And partly what we're attempting to do in the exhibit, really, yeah, I guess we have to look at the history of it all, is try to attempt to explain why is it that Western New York plays such an important leadership role in that movement for American women's suffrage. And that's really what we're trying to do, is lay out for people and outline all the ways in which Haudenosaunee women appear in history, culture, politics, religion, within the Haudenosaunee way of life, and use that as the real reasons why there was such a marked and notable impact on the movement.
Later this hour, I'll go over some of the differences that OneidaIndianNation.com has a look at, the differences between Haudenosaunee culture and Euro-American culture when it comes to women in social life, economic life, spiritual life, and political life. And framed this way, I find it remarkable. But let me ask, Michael, when you're putting together this kind of an exhibit, you got to make some choices. It's probably difficult, you know, to decide how are we going to frame and tell this story. Tell me a little bit about, you know, some of the characters, the people that you chose to focus on and what you hope the public is going to be learning about.
It's difficult, for sure. The information that we want to share would take, you know, a lifetime to accumulate, really. And we have to reach out to the community and people who, Native community and people who understand and live this tradition, you know, and to convey that to the public is really difficult. So you have to sort of winnow out the important messages, the highlights, and our exhibit is not the be-all, end-all. It's not going to explain everything to every person, but we hope that we at least are touching on the most important and make that clear as to why it is that Haudenosaunee women through history and today continue to be leaders.
All right, let me grab one quick phone call before we get to Michelle Shenandoah, who's a writer, a speaker, and who's going to be joining us in just a moment. This is Manon in Rochester calling to join the program. Go ahead, Manon.
Hi, this is Manon. Hi, Evan. Hi, everyone. It's very interesting you're talking about the women in Native American Indian culture, Haudenosaunee. I hope I said it right. I would like to comment that all over the world, women have been struggling for centuries in all cultures. And the reason that women are always dominated or controlled is because of Judaism, Christianity, Islam, or all the other religions trying to be male-dominated, as well as society and what was called the divided spheres of hunter-gatherer and women should stay at home. And I think those roles have changed because women are now in sports and politics, women are scientists, women are in education. And
Manon, we're losing the quality of the call there, Manon, so thanks for the phone call. But let me just kind of build on some of what Manon was saying about women and sort of religious culture and how that may have impacted other societies. This is one of the things that OneidaIndianNation.com contrasts between Haudenosaunee culture and Euro-American culture under the heading of spiritual differences. So here are the headings under Haudenosaunee culture. Number one, sky woman, the spiritual being, catalyst for the world to see. Number two, Mother Earth and women spiritually interrelated. Number three, women have responsibility in ceremony. And number four, responsibilities are in balance with those of men. Whereas in Euro-American culture, number one, no female in the Godhead. Number two, spirituality not connected to the earth. Number three, women forbidden to speak in many churches. And number four, responsibilities are subordinate to the man's authority. So I wonder, Michael Galbin, a fair contrast? I mean, that's generally speaking, but fair to contrast that way?
Well, I would say, I mean, in general, those are some observations that could be made, yeah, and the differences between the two cultures.
And so Manon seems to be linking that to the subordination of women in society writ large, and I wonder if you also agree with that conclusion.
Well, I mean, it's not really for me to compare the two. We're trying to simply provide examples as to why Haudenosaunee women appear so prominently and become a model for change in the future around the world. You know, Haudenosaunee people received a message long ago from a man in English known as the Peacemaker, and this message and this way of life has been sustained in its core until today, and that way of life supported justice, it supported equity, it understood that women needed to take a central role in politics and in leadership, and I think that really is our message. And if you compare it to other ways of life, that's really up to you.
Haudenosaunee Women from the Time of Creation opens on Saturday, March 24th, at the Seneca Art and Culture Center. And the exhibit is going to be available and run until, Peter, Michael?
Probably about 2 years it'll be up. And, you know, it's in the area we call our changing exhibit area. So at the moment, we're looking out 2 years into the future and saying it will be available to people to see. You know, Evan, I want to preface you know, some of the remarks that we have been making here with this comment. Our own women, you know, we need to be self-critical, and our own women, at this point in time, have this very strong sense that their voices are not being heard as they need to be, that they need to reassert this matrilineal role that and society. And so we had a gathering of women last summer, and I believe that our guest who's going to phone in will address this too. But I think it's important to note that it was a strong message that they were delivering. First, they were sharing it among themselves, that, you know, the responsibilities that they have and that they need to rekindle this relationship where women really truly have, you know, an equal voice, okay? Secondly, they wanted to make sure that we understood it. Those of us men who were allowed to participate or were asked to make a presentation or something like that, they wanted to make sure we got the message and that we carried this message to our leadership of the need for reasserting and establishing that that equality of voice and responsibility for our future.
Well, let me bring in that guest now. It's Michelle Shenandoah, who is a writer, a speaker, of the member of the Oneida Indian Nation of New York. And just a short Google search, Michelle, tells us that you are a very important figure in terms of your work in a number of different areas. So thanks for taking the time to join us. How are you?
Seguli, I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on your show today.
And let me ask you, you know, what it means to you to be part of Haudenosaunee Women from the Time of Creation coming up here.
Oh, it's a real honor. There's so many powerful women across our entire Confederacy. And, you know, the way I feel about it is that I'm doing the work that's in front of me. And I'm putting one foot in front of the other and connecting as much as I can with all of my sisters and brothers across the Confederacy. And to have been invited to this came as a surprise to me, because there's so many really, really phenomenal women that are there. So I feel it's an honor, and it's really, really a privilege, because, you know, the strength of our women goes all the way back to our creation story, and to be included in this story that will be featured at Ganondagan means a lot to me.
Michelle, can you share a little bit more about what Peter was just talking about, the notion of sort of reinvigorating the appreciation and understanding and the elevation of women's voices in your culture?
Yeah, well, I think it's really important to understand the, it sounds to me like, I know I'm a little late to the show and I didn't hear everything that was set up beforehand, but it's really important to understand the context of the Haudenosaunee worldview, which really starts through the lens of a woman, and our creation story is that through a woman, and our leadership is really structured in a way that the women really help to guide the people, and it's the men who oversee pursuing that direction that's set. And as we know, and I'm sure you're informing your listeners today, that was broken by colonization, and that was broken by genocide, that was broken by residential schools, and that had a really, really big impact on our community that's still felt today. It broke apart our family structure, it broke apart our communities, and we're still recovering from those spaces today. And in that, there was a lot of forced assimilation by the U.S. government onto our systems, in which a lot of the worldview was incorporated in the ways of patriarchy, right? And so some of those thought processes have made their way into our community. And so when we're talking about the women's voices being lost or not being heard, is because directly of this colonization that has happened within our communities. For all of our people, we still have that connection to our ways. And we still understand those responsibilities that each of us have as men and women. And I think that in our hearts and in our minds and in the best ways that we can, we try to lean into them and we try to practice them. But in the modern day world that we live in, we do face those challenges. And so being able to honor our culture, to honor the responsibilities and the roles that men and women have and children have and our elders have when in our community is really, really very important. And so we try to lean into them as best as we can. And I think that with what's, you know, happening in this day and age, and that women really are rising up in their voice and in their power around the world, you can see it. And just in Mexico, recently, there was a gathering of women, of 9,000 indigenous women who came together to create this collective to say, okay, enough of these patriarchal systems and ways of living that are destroying the earth, that don't respect women. And that's the same thing that we also face here as Haudenosaunee women and as women around the world. And indigenous women really, really see that because of their connection to the land. And so that's kind of really referring back into that space to be able to honor that voice of the woman because of her connection to the land and because of her life-giving abilities to be able to look down into that future and to look to the children in the future and make sure that we leave a world for them that is even better than what we have. And I don't know as a human race today that we can say that that's what we're doing.
Michelle, this is a great opportunity for me to ask you as a thought leader for your thoughts on a subject that we discussed here about a month ago on this program about the debates that modern feminism has. And one of our guests, among many who have raised this point, have argued that the patriarchy is largely gone. Now, that was not the prevailing viewpoint of our other guests, but one of our guests said that, you know, that it is overstated and that the patriarchy is largely eroded. And, you know, some of our other guests said, whoa, and the kind of the discussion took off from there. But I'm curious to know, as you raise points about patriarchy, how you see it manifesting in, you know, sort of American society life and how it sort of maybe infringes or impacts Haudenosaunee culture.
Yeah, sure. Well, we have to understand that, you know, the founding of the U.S. culture, Canadian culture, you know, across, you know, the Americas, when you look at, you know, the colonization that has happened, the foundation of it, the core of it is premised in patriarchy. It was really about a continuation of, you know, imperialist thinking that came from Europe and that placed its feet down onto the earth, which was indigenous and which was really from a point of view that honored women, that honored life. And that patriarchy has continued to roll forward in our lives. We can't ignore the history that has happened. We cannot ignore it because as indigenous people today, we are dealing with all of the after effects of that patriarchy. It's not history, it's today. So when we talk about residential schools that forced assimilation on our people, where many of our people died, where many of our people were beaten for speaking their language, the effects of all of that we feel today. And it's called intergenerational trauma. And that's where it's passed down from generation to generation. So when you see a breakdown in society, right, that was something that has been passed down. And we have a breakdown in our society because our family structures were broken. Our community and nation structures were broken by patriarchy. And so we're still dealing with that today. If we were operating in the full sense of who we were and who we understand ourselves to be, we would live in a very, very, very different society right now, because in Haudenosaunee worldview and in our way of living and being, it really is within the seat of a woman that our culture is perpetuated and that our governance and the voice of the people is heard. And it's our leaders and our male leaders who are the ones to oversee that and to protect the people and to protect those desires and see them followed through. And you don't have that happening today. And so we are literally recovering from all of that violence that's happened. And so it's now in this space where it is our women finding that power once again, because in that process of colonization, you know, what happened is the U.S. government structured itself on our format, but deliberately left out the role of women. When you look at the three sides of the government, the three branches of the government, that's based on our system. Right. And, you know, there's a lot of history that's there. We could go deep into it. And if you come to the exhibit, you'll learn a lot more about it. But that was left out. And so women, American women, have had to fight for equality. They want to be equal to man. Right. They want to be paid as much as a man, to be able to show that they can do everything that a man can do. This is not the Haudenosaunee worldview. Our view was that the women as life givers hold a sacred space within our community because we ensure that life continues. And it's the men who protect that. And it's the men who have to rise up to the space of being able to honor that life. It's a very, very different perception. I have an issue with saying that Haudenosaunee women were equal to men. That's not the case. And that's not the way that I've been taught. In fact, it's a special elevation. We're equal in regard to our responsibilities and the duties that we have here in life. We all have to care for and protect life and the continuation of life. And that's the ways in which we are equal. But when you look at our culture, we have songs and dances that honor women. And they've been with us since time immemorial. We don't have the song that honors the men for them to have their own dance. The men, and from little boys, they learn these songs and they sing them. And those dances are a part of our ceremonies. And the reason that we honor that is because women are the life givers. So it's a sacred responsibility. It's a sacred duty that we have here. And when you talk about patriarchy, that does not honor that space. And this is why when you look in Canada and even in the U.S., the rates of rape and murder against Indigenous women is so high. It's so through the roof. And that is patriarchy.
Michelle Shenandoah joining us. So let me follow that up with a question on, and I'm curious to get Michael and Peter's take on this as well. When you have a culture that is impacted or, you know, sort of injured or had violence done upon it through a process like colonization, and this much time has passed, and there is this moment of trying to grab onto what does it really mean? What does Haudenosaunee culture really mean, and how has it been impacted, and what are the pernicious influences, and can we sort of reassert what it means to have that culture exist today? Can it, Michelle, can it be sort of gotten back in any sort of whole way? Is it always going to be kind of an amalgam given the injury and the influence that's happened over time? Or can there be some sort of a reassertion of culture in what might be, for lack of a better word, a more pure sense?
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, the answers come through the examples. And we have a lot of instances in our own history as Haudenosaunee people where we faced confusion or war or difficult times. And yet it was our culture that guided us and led us to a more elevated space and living in a place of peace for 1,000 years, which is really unheard of anywhere else in the world, right? And so we're not far from that space, and we carry that with us and who we are. So as we're trying to, you know, take off these these layers and these burdens that, the history of colonization has put on us, that pureness and that light is still there. And one of the ways that we really, really can begin to find that is when you look into the culture, right? What did we do, right? Why were women sacred? Because they were life givers, because we thought of the children, because we thought of the future, men and women. Right. That was our worldview. You look to the earth and you give thanks for the earth and you give thanks to all those future generations that are coming. And that's where our answer again is. It's in our young people. It's to be able to help them to be able to come back into that space of embracing who they are. Because of colonization, we became disassociated with understanding the, feeling of being human being. And we've become disassociated with in our ability to parent as mothers, as fathers, as communities. And when we get back into that space of thinking again of our young people, of being able to show them, I love you, I see you, I'm here for you, here's your culture, here's this song that's going to help you to become who you are as a man, here's this song and this dance that's going to honor who you are as a woman. And we think about it in that way, and we look to our young people and we give them those gifts. They have that ability to rise, and they have that ability to begin to shape what that future is. And it's up to me, and it's up to all people who are adults to be able to open that door of possibility for them. And it is happening. It's happening across communities across Turtle Island. And, it's happening even more specifically with our young people who are finding their rites of passage again to be able to help them to transition from that space of being a child to becoming an adult and understanding those responsibilities that you have as a Haudenosaunee person, as an Ungwaihoe person, to live here on Earth. Right. We all have a responsibility to the earth, and the failure of our society today as a bigger culture, a global culture, is we're not looking at that responsibility that we have to the earth. So that can come back. But again, it's about looking through that worldview. So I think there's something really powerful for people to consider when you're looking at through the lens of the Haudenosaunee people into the world that we live in today and the possibilities for our future.
And Michelle, 90 seconds with you, because I know you got to go. So last question for you is, I think, there is a real sort of entry into the power and the culture of Haudenosaunee women with non-Native peoples by reminding them that our own suffrage movements have been inspired by Native women, by Haudenosaunee women. And we kind of told that story, Lucretia Mott, so many others were inspired by what they perceived as a more equal or a more fair society. I wonder for some thoughts on you from you on that, and how important it is for us to kind of keep in mind the influence and history that Haudenosaunee women had.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really, really very important. Within this country in particular, we can take a look at, what women's rights have done for, the American culture, for the women in America. But it's also, helped women in other spaces around the world to be able to identify their voice, their rights, their being here as a woman. But I think what was missing, again, was going back to that space of this notion of equal, right? Because in the Haudenosaunee worldview, the women never, ever had to assert themselves as equal. In fact, they had an elevated space because of the fact that they were life givers. And I think that that's one important thing that was missed in the women's rights movement. And I think it's something that's really, really crucial for women to understand today and to begin to embody that and to live that, because it helps you to look to the future. It helps you to look to those generations that are not born. When you think about the, your own great-great-grandchildren who don't even live today. And if you're living today for them, it's such a really very different worldview. And the other thing is that it makes you think about community. And one thing that I can say as an observation of the bigger global culture that I see, especially playing out here in the United States, is very singular. Everybody's very focused on their singular right, their singular ability to be able to drive a nice car, have a nice home, live in the right school district, have the right job, end up in the right school. It's very singular, and we don't operate this way. We operate based on the wholeness and the wellness of everybody, and it's right within our teachings. We have one dish, one spoon. If one eats, we all eat, or we don't eat at all. And that's how we think. It's very different. So when you think about that worldview, it's communal. It's based on making sure that the wellness of my brothers, my sisters, my aunties, my cousins, my grandparents, my neighbors, people of my family, that we all are taken care of together. And so that's one of the things that I guess that I would like to share is I think that's really important for, you know, the women's movement today to consider, because it's not about the equality with men. It's about what is the life that we're living for each other and lifting each other up and making sure that we leave that better tomorrow for our future generations.
Michelle Shenandoah is an inspirational writer, a speaker, thought leader, and one of the seven women featured in the Walking Into World section of the forthcoming exhibit at Ganondagan and the Seneca Art and Culture Center, Haudenosaunee Women from the Time of Creation. Looking forward to that, and thank you so much for taking the time for this program today, Michelle.
Yahweh, Michelle. Very well done.
Thank you.
Very well done.
let's get our only break of the hour. And we come back, Peter Jemison and Michael Galbin are here from Ganondagan, and they'll remind you why we are here and what you can experience starting Saturday, March 24th. We'll get their thoughts on what they just heard from the remarkable Michelle Shenandoah, and a lot more to come with them next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on the next Connections. The story of Trevion Rowe has shocked and moved the Rochester community. A 14-year-old who died because adults made mistakes. Those are the words of Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren. We'll talk about what happened and what needs to change so these kinds of events don't happen again. Second hour, a trash incinerator project in the Finger Lakes. A job creator or a blight on the landscape? We'll talk about it. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Michael Galbin, Peter Jemison, will you remind our listeners why we're here in the first place? And then we got to get back to, we were just during the break, we were talking about how remarkable Michelle Shenandoah is the very, very copious food for thought that she gave us there. We're going to get to that in a second. But Peter and Michael, remind our listeners what's coming up starting March 24th.
We have a brand new exhibit opening at the Seneca Art and Culture Center, which is part of Ganondagan, and it's at 7000 County Road 41. The new exhibition will open on March 24th to the public. And on that day, and as I had said a little bit earlier, Michael will talk about the tours, the organized tours that we'll have of the exhibit, and you know, some of the other things that people will be able to experience when they come. You know, missing from our table here today, Evan, is Ronnie Ryder, Veronica Ryder, who's a member of the Seneca Nation, a member of the Wolf Clan, was part of the curatorial committee along with Michael and I in developing this exhibit. And Michael and I, you know, felt that it was absolutely essential that a voice like Michelle's became a part of today's conversation because, you know, we're two men. You know, we cannot explain, you know, the views of other women. We really want women to have a voice. And this is part of the whole reason for the exhibit is to show the various ways in which our women have had an impact on our society and have an impact on society at large.
So let's talk a little bit about what we heard from Michelle Shenandoah, who, you know, during that brief break, Michael Galbin, first of all, you said everything she said is right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot there. And But what she really was focusing on and sharing with the listeners is the reality in Native communities today, right? And part of, and really our exhibit does not actually focus on that. Our programming throughout the year and the coming 2 years will. You'll get a chance to interact with voices, Haudenosaunee women, who can address those ideas. We're simply trying to express and get the public to understand those ways in which Haudenosaunee women have impacted culture. And but what Michelle has, you know, very aptly accomplished is the reality today that Haudenosaunee women face.
So there's a difference, in other words, from ideals in an exhibit to a lived experience now. And I want to ask you, Michael, you know, just your thoughts on, as we talked with Michelle about finding a way back towards something that really does create a lived experience that is closer to those ideals. And if that's possible in a society now where there has been so much violence and for so long.
I'm confident that it can. You know, I guess I want to tell you a brief story about how this all came to be. How did Haudenosaunee women appear so prominently in culture, right? There was a moment, as Peter described earlier, where there was constant fighting. This occurred a long time ago, and a lot of people say over 1,000 years ago, there was this period of darkness for all the Haudenosaunee people. And war, intertribal warfare, really was what people were existing in. And the reciprocal retaliations of this war caused a lot of pain and suffering and death. And the warriors, the men who were conducting these wars, were, you know, going back and forth, and there was really no end in sight. No one could see beyond the pain that they were experiencing from deaths within their community, so they would retaliate. And a man was given a message, and this man, they call the peacemaker, Dekanawida, he realized that he had a way that could put an end to all of this. And yet he needed help. And the first person that, the first one that he encounters is actually a woman they call Jigonsaset. And he goes to her. And her role at the time was along a path they call the warrior's path. And she lived there. And she entertained men traveling east and west, enemies of one another, in her home, fed them, and listened to their stories. And when she was approached by the peacemaker, he said to her, "This is our new way. We're going to give you this. This law exists, which is founded on peace and righteousness, justice. And if you accept that, which you must, we can put an end to this. And once you've accepted that, you have to stop doing what you were doing because you were complicit. And in that way, you were contributing to this way of life, this violent way of life. And if you can do that, and if you can understand that, then we can move ahead in a peaceful way." And that's what he was saying. And she becomes the first to accept the law, but she accepts it for all Haudenosaunee women. And in that acceptance, understands that they had to rise up and take a prominent role, seize the power that they already had, but assert it in a way that could put an end to this cycle of violence that they were experiencing. And I'm confident that women can still do that. You know, we see that today in our modern world. People are damaged, they're hurt by somebody, they fight back, and they bring violence upon them, and back and forth and back and forth. And how does that all end? Well, there is an answer, and that's what the peacemaker brought, was this method by which discussion, talking, bringing parity to women and men, and could bring about peace.
Can I say this in a way that is, I hope, as little patronizing as possible? I just say total admiration. Michael, there's a reason that you do what you do. I love the listening to the stories that you tell and the history that you share. And there is, I hope, a lot of wisdom there. And so I wonder as well, do you think that there is a set of lessons to be learned apart from Haudenosaunee culture, from people of all cultures, about that? Because you're right, we're at these cycles of violence. Violence visited upon violence, visited upon violence. And how do you end that? And do you see wisdom, you know, sort of to be grabbed and shared, not just for Haudenosaunee women who want to kind of get back to those ideals or in that culture, but for everybody?
Well, I mean, the story is a positive one because they brought about, as Michelle describes, 1,000 years of peace. And, you know, so there is a lesson there, and there's a path. There's a pathway which could be found again, you know, to arrive at peace. But it needs everyone cooperating.
Peter?
You know, one of the things that we say, excuse me, is the power of the good mind. In other words, to use your mind, we often think that we can't talk to our enemy. We can't talk to those people that we don't agree with. We've created this world of great division, right? And we're living in that right now. But we really do have to believe that all human beings have been given the power of reason, and we have to be able to have that conversation with them, as difficult as it may seem.
there has to be some type of a conversation. I admire so much the students that walked out the other day from their school because they decided to take it upon themselves to try to bring about some change and to try to do it in a peaceful manner, to try to do it in a way in which they're directing their minds towards something good, which is an end to the things that have been threatening and destroying people's lives. So, you know, again, here's an example of young people using the power of the good mind, turning away from hate, and trying to find a way to teach to the world the power of love, the power of good. And it's still an important message, no matter who is delivering it. If we can bring that message to people through the exhibit that we're doing, that's just one step that we hope will be accomplished, is that it may, for the first time, touch someone who has not been aware of any of this or who doesn't think about that, as our leaders were trying to help us to understand.
Do you share Michael's optimism, Peter, that Haudenosaunee women, for example, can get back to a form that is closer to the ideals expressed in this exhibit as opposed to a culture that has been impacted so much by colonialism?
Well, I'm going to borrow the words of a Mohawk Bear Clan mother who was at this gathering that we had. And she looked at me, and I don't think she actually wagged her finger at me, but she looked at me with very real resolve. And she said to me, "I want you to tell our chiefs that we are serious, that we mean it." What she's saying is, we're going to bring about change. We are going to rematriate our society. We're going to go back to the model that we had, and we're going to make it come back to life. If it's lost some life, if it's lost some meaning, we're going to see that it happens again. And that kind of, as I say, that kind of resolve is what's going to make it happen, you know. And they have a plan to keep working together, to keep gathering together, and to keep sharing this message, as Michelle just did for us, that they think we need to hear.
One of the things that we have talked about in terms of women's roles in Haudenosaunee culture is this powerful connection to the land. We saw a lot of women leading some of the demonstrations at places like Standing Rock, and I think this is a good time to ask both of you, for listeners who haven't followed perhaps as closely, you know, more than a year into a Trump administration that is very much in favor of those kinds of pipeline projects and you know, certainly came on one side of the issue, how you see that playing out right now, how that's unfolding. Michael?
Well, people need to revisit what is respect. And in terms of the land, to have respect for the land, to have respect for the water, to have respect for one another, to have respect for men and for women. And the leadership trend that I've observed in the past year is a departure from that reality, from that necessity. And at least from my opinion, it's going to take years to recover from this administration's way of thinking. It makes me very fearful when you have leadership which has no respect, and in other words, respect is directed in the wrong way, I would say. When there's a respect of power, you know, over someone else or over something, and a respect for wealth, you know, which is totally antithetical to what Native people are taught, and I think that is really damaging, you know, for all people. So I'm hopeful. I remain hopeful, but I don't see much of the good mind in politics today.
Okay, Peter.
Well, you know, I'm going to be honest. I'm in a position of leadership. You know, I'm in a position of responsibility. So the voice, you know, and the things, my personal view about politics of today, you know, I kind of have to reserve that for, you know, another forum, let's put it that way. But what I do know is that there are things that are taking place in my community. For example, the Seneca Nation is made up of Cattaraugus and Allegheny. These are two territories that belong to our people today that we've managed to hang on to. The one that's known as Allegheny experienced a dam being built on it on the Allegheny River in the 1960s that took away from us 10,000 acres of land. Right now, what we're beginning to have to deal with is that there is a company that wants to take the wastewater that comes from fracking and pump that basically into the Allegheny River. The Allegheny River flows right through the middle of our Allegheny territory, and it will then flow downstream to Pittsburgh. It will then flow downstream, of course, to the Ohio River and ultimately to the Mississippi River. Fracking is under, you know, has the ability to not tell people what are the ingredients or whatever the compounds, chemical compounds are used that are part of fracking. So we have really no way of knowing exactly what may be pumped into our river. But that is still a source of life. Water is life. That's what came from the North Dakota demonstration at Standing Rock. Water is life. And that river is our life. It has been the life of our people that live there. You know, the fish that enjoy that, the animals that enjoy that, the birds, and the people who, it's a part of their way of life. They live on that river. And so we have to be ever vigilant. Again, we're going to experience, you know, an effort for a company to be more powerful than the voices of the people, more powerful than a nation of Native people.
That doesn't sound as optimistic. But maybe these are the moments when there is a rallying, a mobilization.
I'm going to say one thing more. After the dam was built in the 1960s, and as our people that were young at the time that happened to them grew up, they adopted this motto, never again, never again. Never going to let something like that happen where you take away our land from us again. And so those people have resolved there to do everything in their power to prevent these kinds of things from happening. But it really requires us to spread our message farther than just our own home community, because our own home community, there are too few voices. There's a limited access to the airwaves like we have here today to do this. So I'm taking advantage of this. I'll say it right out. I'm taking advantage of this opportunity to talk to your listeners, because you've afforded us that opportunity to come to this station. And, you know, this is a broad enterprise, isn't it? Because all of the people of this area have to buy into the idea that there needs to be an independent voice that tries to tell truth, that is going to address truth. And without that, we're doomed, right? So in that sense, I'm optimistic, because here I am able to do this, and you're affording us that opportunity, as are the people of this community who support this idea. So there's good, right? But we have to recognize what the forces that we're up against, and that it's not simple. It's not going to be a simple task to prevent what the intent of that company is.
All right, down to our last couple of minutes. Let me ask Michael Galbin, curator of the new exhibit opening coming up on Saturday, March 24th. And it's an exhibit at Ganondagan, Haudenosaunee Women from the Time of Creation. And so starting on Saturday, March 24th, you can experience that exhibit. Michael, we've covered a lot of ground, but what haven't we covered in our last couple of minutes that you want to make sure we mention here?
Well, it's important to know that the opening weekend that we are going to be holding guided tours and a preview of a very wonderful short film by one of our friends, Gajit Juni Fox, related to the story of how the Haudenosaunee women impacted the American women's suffrage movement. And that'll happen on the top of every hour, Saturday and Sunday, March 24th, the first opening day, and the 25th on that Sunday. So we hope to see as many people as we can through our doors.
And I would just close with this point here. I mean, I think that is a very important historical note for us to keep in mind. And I think this exhibit, it sounds to me like it has been wonderfully curated so as not to center the white suffrage women, but to make sure their story is included because of the lessons they learned and the impact they felt from Haudenosaunee women. But there's so much beyond that. So again, it's a great entry point for those of us who've been certainly following the history of suffrage. There's a lot of anniversaries this year, 2020, but there's so much more to experience at the new exhibit that opens Haudenosaunee Women from the Time of Creation starting Saturday, March 24th. I think Peter mentioned going to run for around 2 years, so a lot of time for you to have a chance to see that at the Seneca Art and Culture Center. Thanks to both of you for being here. Michael Galbin, curator, and always good to learn from you. Thanks for taking the time to come out today.
Thanks, Evan.
And Peter Jemison, historic site manager for Ganundagan. Peter, always good to see you. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you so much, Evan.
You got it. Let's continue these discussions. A lot of great stuff today, and some tough but important conversations coming up tomorrow. As always, we appreciate all of the feedback and comments from our listeners, and I know we will talk to you then. Until then, our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, and Megan Mack, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. We'll talk to you Friday on member-supported public radio.